Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, September 20th, 2017, and later today, the Green Bay Packers will be on the field for their first practice of the week in preparation for the Cincinnati Bengals. And of course, after so many injuries against the Atlanta Falcons, we have no idea what percentage, what contingent of this Packers roster will be out on the field. Some of that will be cleared up later this morning when Coach Mike McCarthy has his season-opening press conference. But there's no doubt that Sunday's trip to Atlanta could potentially be a costly one from a health standpoint and, of course, a win-loss standpoint for the Packers. And along those lines, we have a special guest today to discuss some of these injuries and everything that's going on health-wise with the Packers. His name is Charlie DeClean, physical therapist for Bellin Health, Titletown Sports Medicine and Orthopedics, which I'm sure many of you have seen is right across the street from Lambeau Field on Ridge Road. He's also my physical therapist. He deals with my knees here on the Packers podcast. And so, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So for somebody who deals with sports medicine, who brings athletes from an injured state back to a healthy state, I got to think that for you, watching as many guys go down as they did Sunday night has to be like pulling your hair out, just seeing all the rehab that's going to happen in the next few weeks now.
Absolutely, and knowing that their staff of four or five athletic trainers there are going to be working around the clock to get these guys ready in a really short turnaround. You know, I get the luxury of having people worry about 4 to 6 weeks. They have the luxury of 6 to 7 days.
And these guys are all treated in-house by the physical therapists and staff members here at Lambeau Field. So even though you work across the street, you're not hands-on with these guys. You just know all about what they're going through and what these injuries are treated like.
Absolutely. My role today is to speak to injuries in general, not specifically. They do everything in-house here, more or less, to keep things tight. And they have a very talented staff here that can handle everything in-house.
So I've only been covering the team for 2-plus seasons, and I get the same question just about once or twice every year. And after this game, it was the same. You look at the injuries that took place during the game. Mike Daniels, hamstring. Jordy Nelson, quad. Kentrell Bryce, groin. Jari Evans, groin. Devon House, quad. All soft tissue muscle injuries. And so everybody wants to know, why does this always seem to be the case with the Packers? Why are there so many soft tissue injuries versus a broken finger, a broken ankle, that kind of stuff? So, you know, with the way that these guys play, why are soft tissue injuries so prevalent just in football in general? Why does this happen so often from non-contact a lot of times?
Yeah, for one, you're pushing your body to the limit. I mean, it's one of those things that, especially now I'm several years removed from really high competitive sports, so I don't have to sprint very often anymore. You know, so these guys are going all out for 5 to 6 seconds time and time again, and a lot of them pushing their bodies to limits that we honestly can't imagine. And with that, you're pushing soft tissues to the limit. Specifically, hamstring and groin are probably the two most popular ones that people see missing, thinking, I did that once, it can't be that hard. But you don't realize that a position that they play can dramatically make that very, very difficult.
And we'll talk about the position-specific stuff in a second. But I'm curious about surface. You know, when people play on hardwood for basketball versus, you know, grass and dirt for baseball versus grass or turf for football, how much does the surface itself make a difference in, you know, the likelihood of suffering injuries in sports?
So if we stay with basketball, for example, if you look how shoes have evolved, and then not only that, our abilities to create tackier floors, you're able to stop and start faster, which means forces through the body that you have to control are way higher. No different than, say, we're in Atlanta, where it's turf and you're wearing cleats. You're going to be able to track and hold better than you are, even though Lambeau's a composite field. It's not going to matter. That's still going to give more than a turf will.
And so when you see players go through games, like let's take the Packers for example. Last year they played that game against the Texans in the snow. Is that a game where the medical staff just braces itself for a lot more of these injuries because there's just less, you know, tread or traction for these guys to stop? Is that something where soft tissue injuries would be more common on a slippery surface?
Yes and no. You might have, say, a hamstring more from your legs slipping out and you actually falling down and it overstretching versus on a nice turf day and you're be able to dig and you're twisting harder, it's different types of forces. I would say that maybe when things can get sloppier, you could have people accidentally rolling up on somebody and you're going to see a different type of injuries.
Gotcha.
So maybe not, maybe still soft tissue, but more ligament versus muscle and tendon.
So let's start where pretty much everything started for the Packers Sunday night, which was the offensive line. The fact that, you know, David Bakhtiari had a hamstring injury and was out. Jason Spriggs had a hamstring injury and was out. And then Bulaga had an ankle. So let's talk about that separately. But with offensive linemen, especially tackles, what is so difficult to try and push through a hamstring strain or whatever the issue is there. And again, we don't know the specifics of these injuries. We don't know if they're tears, strains. We don't know the degrees. But first of all, kind of explain what a strain is and then why at the offensive line position, when they're backpedaling, when they're kicking out, or when they're pushing forward in the run game, why is that so difficult?
So a muscle or tendon strain, so they're both called the same. A sprain is ligament. So a ligament connects bone to bone. So we call that a sprain. With a strain, it's muscle or tendon. So that's really muscle, tendon, then bone. So when you're looking at either of those, a sprain or a strain, there's 3 degrees. First degree, second degree, third degree. If we skip to the end, third degree is a complete tear. So that would be like cutting a ribbon. So that is literally having a ligament completely torn, such as ACL. Or looking at muscle where you're actually having the tendon or inside the muscle, you're having a complete tear. Not nearly as common in muscle as it is in ligament. When you look at the hamstring specifically, it starts in your hip, right? Kind of on your sit bone of where you sit and feel those bones dig in. That's where your hamstring starts. It goes all the way down and crosses your knee and actually connects right to the top of your shin bone. So very, very long muscle. When we talk about these two being offensive linemen specifically, kicking back maybe not be as big a deal, but if you talk about you have a 300-pound-plus person trying to push through you and you have to set in and not let them get past you, your hamstrings aren't just to bend your knee up, it's also to extend your hip. So you are planting that foot in and pushing back. You're not just using your quads and, say, your hips. Your hamstrings are also kicking in very hard, and that is not easy to do for hamstring strength.
When you talk about guys that need to get back to the top level, you know, of athletic performance the way that NFL players do, what would rehab be like for a hamstring strain that's not necessarily a complete tear, just maybe a grade one or grade two?
Right. So what we even see, like in our world, when we'll have people that are not with teams or trying to get back, say somebody who's been let go on an injury settlement, and we'll see them and they'll come in and they'll try to be in our type of facilities, or there's nationally big facilities that people go to if they're trying to get back or 1 year removed. You'll spend an hour in the morning doing rehab. Let's say it's for hamstring. We're going to do some stretching, some soft tissue work with the hands or some tools. We're going to do strengthening. Then they'll probably spend an hour where all they're doing is conditioning or lifting the other parts of the body. So if it's a leg injury, they're going to do all core and upper body for an hour or two. They'll meet with a nutritionist, and they'll talk about foods that they could be looking at to make sure they're getting their body right. Then they might even do massage for an hour. So they will spend sometimes 6 to 8 to maybe even more hours plus a day in a facility just getting treated nonstop.
Is the hamstring one of those parts of the body that can just be fickle when it comes to recovery? Because I remember last year, Corey Linsley, the starting center, tore his hamstring in May. And then basically it took several months for him to get back. And then he had another setback, tore it again. And I was asking him before the game, you know, I said, look, all these injuries are different, but you've sort of been through this. Is this one that is particularly difficult or frustrating for linemen? And he said for him it was, because it's one of those things that you absolutely cannot push it or it will immediately go back 3 weeks or a week or two. Why is that, that the hamstring, you can't push it maybe the way you could with rehab for other injuries?
For one, is because you have to use it every time. So everything he does, and being a center or anywhere along the line, you can't rest that muscle. That muscle's going to have to fire every time. So where the injury in that tissue specifically, it also is greatly changes things.
You mean location-wise?
Right. So if it's in the muscle belly, so smack dab in the middle of the back of your thigh, that's all pure muscle injury. There's different things you can try to do. There's different types of injections they can try to do to stimulate healing and scar things down faster. But when you start talking about things being usually high, right up where it hits when your sit bones, where it's now you're talking where the muscle blends into the tendon, you can have further tearing. So when you look at a first-degree strain or strain, means that you're just having small interstitial things. Those are things that, honestly, those people bounce back within a week. Maybe they're removed for that game, or maybe they're hobbled for the rest of the game, but they can get back. When you talk about a second-degree, means you're having significant tissue tearing. Not full tearing, not cutting the ribbon. Those are the ones that range of what is a second-degree strain or sprain is so large that can dramatically change. But when you're talking about an offensive lineman who is going to bend over as well, so you're now going to be putting tension on that muscle, on the top of the muscle, and he's going to have to use it right off the line, he can't, that muscle will never get a break.
So one of the key losses that the Packers suffered during the game was defensive end Mike Daniels, coming off that tremendous game against Seattle where he was in the backfield, you know, more often than Seattle could could manage. Obviously disrupted everything on the offensive line, opened things up for Nick Perry, who had a huge game as well. He goes out early in the game with a hamstring problem, can't come back. So we just talked about the way a hamstring would influence an offensive lineman. Let's flip it and talk about Mike Daniels on the defensive line, a guy that's moving forward more often than he's moving backward. Why would a hamstring injury be difficult or problematic in those movements?
So very similar to your offensive linemen, where they're setting their feet and not trying to push through. It's the same thing, just other side. You are trying to push through someone. So it's not so much the sprinting. You know, the most common way people hear about hamstring strains is, I was sprinting and felt a pull. And that makes sense. You realize that's how you use your hamstrings. But when you're actually trying to push through somebody, that's again extending the hip. So you are using it to drive your legs straight for power. And you are looking for every muscle group that can help you. So again, you are not going to be able to get any power, which is going to render a guy like that useless if he has a hamstring problem.
I don't know exactly how Bakhtiari and Daniels suffered their hamstring injuries, but I know with Spriggs, he only played one snap against Seattle, so it was pretty easy to figure out where and when this happened. And essentially, it was on an extra point by Mason Crosby, and he went low to block somebody who sort of tipped over and fell onto his back, and then as he was falling down, he immediately reached and grabbed his hamstring. So just from a contact versus non-contact standpoint, can it still be the same injury with these quads, these hamstrings, whether it's a guy that's running and pulls up like you talked about, or a guy that maybe was fallen on and has to overextend because of that? Is it still the same type of thing?
To the muscle or the tendon, it's the same thing. The what we call the kind of method of injury is what changes. So when you look at somebody who slips on ice and goes into like the splits,
right,
you're overextending that muscle very fast. That's probably in that case, from how you described it, how I would look at somebody like Jason Spriggs, of he probably got into a very weird position and was forcefully made to make that muscle get long, and there's only so much it can take.
And when guys are just running and they just feel something pull, is that sort of the same type of thing?
So that can be, as far as the muscle acts the same, but that looks more of a, to me, it more in my world, that's overuse. So that's somebody that is using that muscle more than the muscles around that joint, and then it just can only take so much. So for example, with hamstrings, I see it a lot with sprinters in my world, the high school and the collegiate athlete, who are keep having these hamstring problems. And when we test them, what we see is they're using their quads great, but their hamstrings are hot all the time. They're the first muscle these people want to fire like crazy. It may be underutilizing the hip. Obviously a stereotype, but not everyone, but a very common pattern that we'll see. And our rehab is, we got to get that muscle to settle down, but we really got to get the other muscles to elevate so that everybody's doing a little bit, no one's doing too much.
So the next area I want to turn to is groin injuries for DBs, corners and safeties. When I was having an appointment at your office, we were just sort of shooting the breeze about Randall and Rollins, these guys coming off groin surgeries. And you talked about how when a guy like that has to backpedal and open his hips, that is probably one of the more aggressive and painful movements after a groin surgery. Why is that?
So your groin muscle runs from the inside of your pelvis down the inner thigh to your knee. And it's, when you look at it just on its own, it's just going to bring your leg. If your legs were out like you're doing snow angels and you bring your legs back together, those muscles are bringing your legs together. That is clearly not how they're using them. When you are sprinting, cutting, planting, and twisting, your groin muscle, or what we call your adductors, they're a stabilizer. They're trying to stabilize your leg in space to allow you to make fine-tuned movements. So when you talk about a DB that's going to backpedal, open up their hips, turn and start running, your groin muscle, your adductors, are put in a very big stability type position. Not a power position, but a stability position. If you don't have that, if you're having pain with that muscle, when you go to open up, you're not going to be able to explode like you want to. Pain inhibits muscle. So when you're having pain, the amount of power you can put out is going to go down. You know, your volume on your thing, you're not going to be able to turn the volume up as much, which then is going to, when you're talking about fractions of a second of people being quick or not quick, that's a big problem.
So the reason I ask is because Kentrell Bryce, the safety, dropped out of this pass game with a groin injury. Now, again, it's not corner, but it's the same type of deal where he's going to be flipping his hips, chasing guys, you know, pushing forward, coming back, whatever the movements require. And so, you know, when I talked to Demaryius Randle before the opener, I said, after our conversation where you explained to me why that would be so painful, I said, how would you describe what it felt like to try and open your hips or flip your hips when you were dealing with recovering from the groin or pre-surgery on this groin? And he said, well, people saw me playing 11 and 12 yards off the line of scrimmage, and the reason was because it took me so long to open my hips that I couldn't do it as quickly, and I needed to create more margin for error for myself, because if I was playing press, tried to backpedal three or four steps and immediately flip on a tenth of a second or a millisecond basis, my hip, my groin would be screaming at me. Does that make sense? Is that what he's talking about, having
Absolutely.
To play off further?
Right. So it was either he comes up with something like that or he doesn't play, right? So it was a matter of creating space for him to make up for, in that case, a deficiency. You're not going to have the power and the quickness at that position, especially corner, when you're kind of sometimes out on an island. That can be devastating.
What's recovery like for a groin injury?
And this is the same for anything. It's all depends, for one, on the severity of the injury, but then also on the person. I think different people have different capacities that their bodies can take more. You look at like a guy like Peppers, who there's no doubt he's had aches and pains over the year, but somehow his threshold is different. We see this a lot with people in the military, that they can just flip a switch and not feel pain, which is crazy. I think different people have that. And I'm not saying that some people need to toughen up. It's more of just everybody's different. And when you talk about injury that really starts nagging or progresses, that's a hard decision to make of how long it's going to take. You could have somebody who literally could have 1 or 2 weeks and they bounce right back from it. And other people, it ends up ending their season.
I know that, you know, every surgery is going to be different depending on what, you know, is available on, you know, pre-surgery screenings or what they find when they go in there. But when guys have this sports hernia injury that we hear a lot, what is the procedure actually doing to try and fix that when they go and see a specialist and actually go under the knife?
So a lot of it is you're thinking that the tissue is just so, for one, so irritated that it can't take anymore, or so damaged that conservative treatments such as stretching, strengthening, different things like that, maybe even injection, just doesn't take anymore. So you are realigning tissues, just like with any soft tissue injury, you're realigning tissues and just then allowing the body to scar down properly. And then also it creates a much larger time for recovery. That's the other problem, thing why I think those have become so popular, is it shuts you down for a big chunk of time and allows your body to actually heal properly.
And a lot of times with these players, that's just what they need. It's not that they want to miss 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. It's just that they're so trained to just push through everything in this sport that a lot of times things can't heal properly until they have that dead period of 3, 4, 5 weeks. Why is a dormant period that beneficial versus maybe just light activity each day? Why is going completely dormant sometimes essential for these guys?
Again, this is where everybody's body is different, but tissues can be finicky. And sometimes you're testing things a little by little and testing it. What you're really doing is re-aggravating that strain. What I explain to patients a lot of times, it's kind of a light switch. Your body either wants to be in repair mode and recovery mode, or it's in trauma mode. And every time that you cause a little flare, you flip that switch, your body stops healing, it goes into this trauma mode, and you're delaying just letting the tissue heal. The hard part is, you and I work in a job where we could take it easy and we're going to be fine, we don't have to miss work. When your job is so demanding on a week-to-week basis physically, where it's all out, that's tough. You don't want to miss work, you don't want to miss getting a chance to play and help your team. And in those cases, you want to push it where it can cause people to kind of have things linger longer, versus a lot of times what we'll see is people go, I'll miss 1 week, I'll shut it down, and then they truly can get almost completely over it and are back.
One of the things that we see with these guys is the ability, because the NFL has so many resources and so much money at their disposal, they can essentially have 24-hour care. You know, we'll listen to guys talk about taking stim machines home and essentially sleeping with the stim machine on. Or, you know, when guys tear their ACLs, they can take home all kinds of different ice machines and things like that. When you talk about a guy that, let's say it's me and I pull my hamstring and you tell me, Mike, it's probably going to be 3, 4 weeks. If I try and substitute what you and I would go through for rehab, which is maybe I come and see you for physical therapy, maybe I go to the Y for an hour and a half, do some stretching, versus literally round-the-clock rehab, can that actually speed up things significantly? Or is there a situation where, regardless, you know, you can try and treat it around the clock, but sometimes these things just need days and hours, even if you're treating them relentlessly?
It's absolutely going to speed up recovery. There's no doubt about that because every piece of those has a benefit to it. Let's take massage is one that is one that gets thrown in that the average person maybe doesn't use, but a professional athlete absolutely is using to speed up recovery. That stimulates blood flow. It helps realign tissues. That absolutely is helping the recovery. Whereas different modalities and stim units, those have their place, and at other times, it can be used even as what I would refer to as a placebo effect, that in their mind, they feel better what's on, or they tell you, I've used that before, it's worked for me, then I'm using it. We're putting that on, right? You're taking it home. If you think it's going to help, we're doing it. We see that all the time in our world as well.
I know it's hard to really put an approximation on this, but if you told me that it was 3 to 4 weeks for my hamstring, and then I'd get treated around the clock instead by the same resources the Packers have, can it literally cut things in half if you go from 6 to 8 hours of treatment a day to 24, or is it not that simple?
I do think you can cut it in half. I do, and that's partially because it's not only just being able to get treated. The quality of treatment that these guys are getting, the Packers staff is crazy talented. They have from top to bottom, every single one of them is crazy talented and can treat it all. It starts at the top with Pepper. He's a physical therapist and athletic trainer. His spectrum is even bigger. But their staff is so talented that it's not only just getting around-the-clock care, but getting around-the-clock care from a very talented staff.
This isn't necessarily specific to anybody that we're going to talk about, you know, this week with the injuries, but all these guys praise the cold tub, cold tub, cold tub. And you see sometimes on Snapchat or Instagram, there's pictures of them just sort of killing time in the cold tub. I think generally people have a pretty good idea of why that's important, but why do these guys swear by it so much? Why is 20 or 30 minutes or 5 or 10 minutes in, you know, water that, you know, is straight out of the Titanic going to really help these guys?
So cold in general makes all your vascular-wise, it constricts. So think of taking a smoothie straw versus, you know, a cocktail straw. The idea is you're constricting. And by constricting all your vessels, you are limiting the body's ability to bring more inflammation to a joint. So let's take knees, for example, where especially as I have to imagine as these guys get later in their career, it's the amount of time it takes them to truly recover from a game. It goes from maybe the next day I'm sore to maybe I'm just feeling better before a game is my guess. I look at our weekend warriors that I'll see a ton of. They'll go and play basketball on Tuesday night, and it's not till Tuesday morning the following week that they're like, oh, I'm finally ready. The ice, in a way, is stopping the body's ability to overreact. So at times it can kind of be like a skipping record or a skipping disc, if you will, where the body sometimes can't help itself but send more inflammation and more inflammation and more inflammation. The ice, in a way, can kind of shock the system to stop that extra flow of swelling to the joint, which then is going to speed up recovery. So it's not so much even in the moment making you feel better as much as it's cutting your recovery time down.
Is there anything to be said for favoring cold tub versus just strapping an ice pack to it the way that we did when we were kids? Is there any difference there?
You're creating a bigger area. So if you get in, I mean, a lot of these guys, I know with one of the renovations the Packers did is they took one of their pools that fits, I bet you, 17, 18 guys, that to you and me would look like a regular pool, and you would sit in it, it would be even like hot tub length. It's like they'll throw in a thing of ice and the ice doesn't melt. It's right about to freeze. And they can get 17 guys in their chest height almost to their necks. You're hitting every joint all the way around. You put an ice pack just on top of your knee, the cold's really only affecting the top of the knee. You put something and get your whole leg in there, it's circumferential all the way around.
How beneficial is just water in general for a lot of these recoveries, whether it's workouts in the pool, things like that? Is that something that gets utilized a lot, pool workouts for recovery for a lot of these guys?
Absolutely, and you'll even hear people as they get older in age, people in their 60s, 70s, 80s tell you they love working out the water. The buoyancy unweights you. So you take a guy that's 325 pounds and now put him in water chest neck deep to his knees, his hips, he might only weigh 75 pounds. So what you're able to get away with in water greatly goes up from a workout standpoint from what they might be able to tolerate on land early on in the recovery.
What type of injuries can really benefit from these pool workouts that these guys do when they're trying to come back from things? Is it mostly knees, ankles, that kind of stuff, the weight-bearing parts of your body?
Yeah, lower extremity, spine as well. A lot of people with back pain will love in the water because you're unweighting the spine as well. But there's a lot of stuff you can do with your upper body there as well. I think as the recreational athlete that I will see probably wouldn't think of water for their shoulder or their elbow, but there's absolutely stuff they're probably doing that on the professional level Whereas when you have access for any knee, ankle, the ability to unweight yet start working on those movement patterns, such as walking, such as even running, you're going to be able to do that in water long before you can do it on land.
Okay, so let's jump back into some of the stuff that happened Sunday night against Atlanta. And I think the one that a lot of Packers fans are sort of holding their breath about is Jordy Nelson. So he had a non-contact quad injury where he essentially came off the line of scrimmage to run a route or block and didn't really even make contact with anybody. And he pulls up and you can see him kind of grab at it. And then he does that little hop skip off the field that we see a lot of guys do. When you talk about a quad injury and a non-contact one, I know we don't know the specifics, but if I just told you that I was running down a soccer field today and my quad went, what would you think is happening there?
So this is the exact, we call it the antagonistic pair for your hamstrings. It is the exact opposite of your hamstrings. When you are running at that level, every muscle in your leg is firing every time he plants. It's not so to look and say, like, oh, that's going to be a lot of quads. Every at that level, to push your body that far, you're getting everything you got out of every out of muscle. When you're looking now at a receiver who is going to come to a stop a lot more often than maybe a corner would, even though this would also be very common for a corner, your quad is going to fire with everything you do. When you squat down to get in and out of a chair, you're using your quad. The severity, we don't know, but anybody who has had a quad strain or feels that, it's uncomfortable. I don't know if that's something he has a history of, but if you just, with the same exact argument for hamstrings, if you have a history of it, sometimes they can nag you a little bit more. Your body can become sensitive to that. At the same time, you're going to use that muscle group every time you run, every time you stop, start. For someone like that, that's why if he's going to play, you know he's feeling good, because it's not something that you're just going to push through.
Is that the type of situation where the rehab would be fairly similar to a hamstring, just targeting a different muscle group?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When you look at, you know, a guy that has a soft tissue injury like that versus, you know, a broken bone and things of that nature, when they're trying to come back from it, can you be, I mean, you see athletes, I know that you don't necessarily work hands-on with the Packers, but you see a lot of high-level athletes and you've worked with high-level athletes. How much pressure are these guys under to try and push through things that you and I would way back off from and essentially, you know, say, okay, 2-3 weeks, no running, nothing? Because I just remember when Doc McKenzie did my surgery last year on my knee, and he's the, you know, the team doctor for the Packers, he said that, you know, if you were 40 or 50 years old, I wouldn't even let you weight bear for 5 or 6 weeks, but because you're young, because you're this, I'll let you do it after 3 or 4. And then James Starks had a really similar procedure to what I did, and he was playing again 2.5-3 weeks later. So when you look at that curve from, you know, somebody maybe that's, you know, my parents' age, 50s and 60s, to somebody like me that's, you know, in pretty good shape but not a high-level athlete versus these high-level athletes, how much pressure are these guys under to really push more than maybe they should because of the stakes of the game?
Well, part of it, I think, is pressure that they put on themselves of they realize how short a career can be, right? And you can't make the team in the training room is a common saying. So you are going to try to get as many times to get on film, to get your chance seen, to show what you're capable of, to get that next contract. I have to imagine that their agent is wanting them to play anytime they can, and I'm sure they're getting a lot of looks from coaches of, so are you available or not? So the hard part is not only the stress that they'll put on themselves to be available, but then also the stress that they are getting from coaches, from agents, from family, from friends, from other players. I can't imagine the pressure these guys are on from a week-to-week standpoint, whereas for like you, I would say, like, why push it? Let's just take it. There's no timeline. There's no deadline. Let's just get you right and take our time.
So let's say, you know, I'm running down the field playing soccer and I feel my hamstring go and I got a really big game in a week and I say, Charlie, you know, I really want to play. I want to give it a shot. If that hamstring is not ready to go by next week, but I play anyway, how much are these guys risking other parts of their body if the one that they injured originally is not yet ready to go? Does that call into question other muscle groups, other areas that could be influenced by, you know, the connectivity of these different parts of the body?
Absolutely. So your body will compensate to try to make up for something that you want to do. If you are able to mentally try to push through it, you're going to compensate. There's no doubt. So there's absolutely the risk. You know, I look at a guy like Adrian Peterson that everybody was like, oh my God, he came back in 4 months from ACL surgery. And to me, that was crazy. And then very shortly after, he's having sports hernia surgery. I can't prove anything, but to me, that screams his body started overusing other areas that are not built to take those kind of pressure and torques and forces through the body to make up for something that really wasn't ready, but he was going to push through it and do that. At the same time, you're also taking a major risk of further injuring that tissue. Think of a small tear in a piece of paper. You risk a bigger tear. And now you're talking something that could be as simple as just rest and recover to now do we have to have that surgically repaired.
The reason I ask is because when I first went to see you for my knee, you were talking about how a lot of times people with knee injuries can be aided by strengthening their hips, which is not something that maybe a lot of people think of right off the bat. And when you talk about pitchers that have elbow problems, a lot of times it can be actually a shoulder issue. Are there connections like that in the body that you see with football players specifically? Like, why are hips so important for knee issues or for pitchers? Why are shoulders so important for elbows? Why do those things work in tandem that way?
And a lot of it I always tell people is just the ideal is uniform strength. Ideally, you're strong everywhere. But a lot of times, you'll find people have big pockets of weakness and big pockets of strength. They're so strong in one area and comparably very weak in others.
So the guy at the gym that has the huge upper body and then has
chicken
thick legs.
But even worse, very, very strong in the front of his body and weak in the back of his upper back. That in the legs... For whatever reason, the most common thing I see is weaker hips compared to the quads and even the hamstrings. And when you look from an anatomy standpoint, your hip muscles are actually the biggest muscle. You have the most muscle fibers in your glutes compared to anywhere else. Yet we find it to be one of the most underutilized muscle groups. So that's why what we're looking for is when you run and you're going to use your quads, your hamstrings, and your glutes, and even your calves, we want to see what can we start putting more pressure on that's getting underutilized to take some stress off the tissue that in my world is getting overworked. In my life, in my practice, we see it tends to be the glutes for a lot of lower extremity injuries that are underutilized. Now, when you're looking at the level of professional athlete and the strength program that they have here and guys that this is a full-time job, these guys are being looked at under a microscope already. So I don't think it's anything like a lot of people go, God, there's got to be something with our staff they're missing. I don't think it is. This game is just people are pushing their body to the absolute limit on a weekly basis. And some people are built for it and some people aren't. And I really think it's quite that simple.
Now, we basically went through everybody that got hurt in this past game. But let's take a step back and look at two guys that one is now on the PUP list and one essentially missed all of training camp. So let's talk about Montrevious Adams, third round pick. Defensive lineman from Auburn drew a ton of praise from teammates for his pass rush ability, which is something the Packers would really love to take advantage of sooner or later in their sub packages, because aside from Mike Daniels, they really don't get a lot of pass rush out of Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry. And he had a broken fifth metatarsal, had a screw inserted into his foot. So that fifth metatarsal is a break that is pretty common. Explain where this is, why it's common, and essentially what the procedure is to try and fix it.
So the long part of your foot, and if we use the hand, it's very similar. So if you put your hand on one hand on the palm of the other and you feel the long bones that come from your wrist to the base of your finger, your first knuckle, those long bones in your hands are called metacarpals and your feet are called metatarsals. Your fifth metatarsal would be the equivalent of your pinky. Okay, so the long bone that comes from starts more or less at almost at the heel and goes all the way to the toes and runs along that arch. That's the long bone. That's called your fifth metatarsal. With your big toe would be your first. So we just number them from 1 to 5, starting at the big toe, going to the pinky toe. So you're talking about the outside of your foot. Very common spot that either can be from more of a traumatic injury would be a nasty ankle roll to the outside. You're rolling over that and that you actually can fracture that bone, or just overuse. It can be as simple as starts as you don't realize it, you have a stress fracture, and then it progresses just with overuse of pounding through the feet.
So in terms of fixing it surgically, you hear a lot of times the word pin, the word screw. Are those essentially interchangeable?
Those are the same, yes.
And then what is the purpose of that? So how do they apply it, essentially?
So a decision that a patient with his surgeon has to make, so in this case a player with a team surgeon has to make, is do we think this bone can heal if we just rest it? Do we think we allow the body to just do its own work? You're looking at it and that crack is lined up just like a puzzle piece on the scan and saying, everything's lined up right. What are the chances this thing can heal on its own? And a lot of it is just going back now. You look at guys like Dr. Anderson, who now joined the Packers staff and joined us here at Bellin, that's coming from Carolina, that is getting people from all over the country, even the world, come and seeing him. When team physicians can talk to a guy like that and say, all right, you've seen this. what are the chances a fracture in that spot heals on its own? That's invaluable. I mean, you know, when Mark Murphy, I've heard him say that's one of the best free agency signings the Packers have had is a guy like Dr. Anderson. It's because of conversations like that saying, so do we put a pin in it and stabilize it, which is really what the hardware is doing, is you're inserting a pin along the length of the bone so that it's holding everything in place, which then allows everything to heal on its own exactly right. Or do you put them in a boot, tell them to stay off it 6 to 8 weeks, and the body will calcify right over it and more or less fuse those two broken pieces again.
Does weight matter at all? In other words, if Jordy Nelson, you know, breaks his fifth metatarsal versus Montrevious Adams, we're talking, you know, 200 pounds versus 300 plus. Does that make a difference at all in terms of recovery or no?
Yes and no. Early on, you're going to limit weight bearing anyways. You're going to tell them an X amount of weight and modify that along the way. To me, it's more of how much power are you trying to generate and also the surface you want to play on. I personally think the reason why we see this a lot in football is you're technically playing in an unstable surface, whereas when you look at a basketball floor, not that you don't see this there, but that's a perfectly flat surface. It's a perfect flat first surface all the time. When you start looking at different surfaces, even turf, the filler, that rubber filler that they use isn't perfectly everywhere. You'll see it kind of be dark in some places and lighter in others, and that can create some imperfections, but especially on natural grass, there's significant imperfections, and that's going to challenge the foot even more to adapt to the surface.
The other foot injury that Packers fans are really waiting to heal up is Vince Beagle, you know, their rookie outside linebacker from Wisconsin, a guy that they thought could contribute immediately on special teams and also add some depth to an outside linebacker position that really needed it or still might need it, depending on who you ask. He had a Jones fracture, which is something that he also dealt with during his most recent season at Wisconsin before entering the draft. That is one that I've heard all throughout my life, and until you explained it to me, I didn't know what it was. So what is a Jones fracture?
So one of the most confusing things that happens in the world of medicine is somebody invents a procedure or discovers a significant type of frequent, and they name it after themselves. So when you hear a fifth metatarsal fracture, if you know any anatomy, you go, okay, so I get it. They fractured the fifth metatarsal. And somebody says a Jones fracture, and you're like, so what does that mean? You fractured the same bone, just a certain section of that bone. So the shape of your fifth metatarsal, if you think of starting from your heel, looking at it towards your toe, the base or towards the heel is a little bit more flared and flat. It narrows into a shaft and then flares a little bit again towards the pinky toe. A Jones fracture is where that flare narrows, or the neck, if you will, right where it meets the shaft. That's a Jones fracture. It is still fracturing your fifth metatarsal. So the only difference is if you fracture in the shaft of the fifth metatarsal, we just call that a fifth metatarsal fracture. If you fracture it right where that flare comes down to meet the shaft, it's a Jones fracture.
If you need a pin put in or a screw, is it essentially the exact same thing regardless?
You're going to put that pin. It's going to run the length of the bone exactly the same. So in essence, they're treated the same. And you have to make the same decisions exactly of any other bone of, can we let it heal on its own if it's lined up perfectly like a puzzle piece? Do we think the body will be able to do it on its own in a timely manner? Or do we feel like we can speed up recovery by putting in hardware and guaranteeing that everything's lined up and it's going to stay in place just right, and that we can then feel that we can start testing the waters a little quicker because we know it's holding it together?
So the short version is that all Jones fractures are fifth metatarsal fractures, but not all fifth metatarsal fractures are Jones fractures. Now, when you talk about the Jones fracture in particular, that's one that I've heard athletes from a number of sports say is a repeatable injury, one that can be really problematic. Why is this one that maybe tends to have a little bit more of a chronic element to it than, you know, just breaking your hand or something like that?
And I don't think there's any rhyme or reason to that as far as maybe the way that somebody pushes off consistently, or the way that maybe their arches ride high. So there's somebody who all the time is putting more pressure on the outside of their foot. So they're going to be riding that fifth metatarsal maybe a little harder than somebody who maybe has flat feet and is going to drive a little bit more through their arch versus somebody that rides right down the middle. So I think part of it can be just totally by chance. You push off or land real hard awkwardly. Absolutely, you can do damage. But if you were repetitively putting more stress on any tissue, whether it be soft tissue or bone, for certain people, you're going to hit a breaking point and you're going to either have a strain, a sprain, or possibly even a stress-type fracture.
What's the recovery like for something like that where they have a pin put in and they essentially have to work back from, you know, that walking boot to getting back to moving to then the rigors and pounding of football? When you have that fifth metatarsal fracture that is surgically repaired. What is the recovery like for that?
So one of the most common questions we get with any type of injury is, so when am I going to be back? When am I going to be doing this? And the hardest part is that you almost have to live – we always tell people you're going to live doctor's visit to doctor's visit. So at the stadium, just because seeing as obviously there's not really money being exchanged, you can do as many x-rays as you want. You don't have to worry about the cost. So a guy – you know, staff like this, they're going to look at that several times. You know, every couple of weeks, I would not be surprised if they're taking an x-ray and they're looking for signs of bone growth. And then, again, having a guy like Dr. McKenzie and Dr. Anderson that have seen so many of these, they're going to be able to look at that x-ray, see a certain amount of calcification over those fractures and go, I've seen that that much. I know that means we can start pushing it. Versus looking at, you know, a lot of guys, and you're like, wow, they had the same injury. They're taking forever. For whatever reason, their body's just healing slower. They're not seeing the calcification they want, so they hold back and they start extending out that timeline. So a lot of it is just literally test and retest, and coming back to, are you healing? Yes, then we can start moving along.
When it comes to this Jones fracture, I saw that, and even just the fifth metatarsal in general, over the years that I've been here, I've seen a couple guys wear some serious orthotic shoes trying to come back from this. What would the orthotic shoes do during the recovery process that maybe just a regular pair of tennis shoes like you and I have don't do?
Sure. So the classic kind of custom orthotic or even an orthotic that you can buy for arch support is really trying to put you in a more neutral position. So somebody who says they have a flat feet or my arches are bad and puts an arch support in their shoe or is looking for a shoe that has a good arch support, in general is trying to get their foot to neutral. They're not thinking it like that, but that's why it feels better. Almost at every joint, things go better when things are neutral. When you're looking at specifically doing orthotics for an actual specific problem, and a lot of times you're looking to unweight an area. So they're going to look at different types of orthotics that will try to unload that fifth metatarsal and, in essence, force the person to start weight-bearing a different way. And that's a transition if you've always done it a certain way. We'll see a lot of people that don't like them at first, and we'll have people wean into them, only wear them for an hour. Take your time. Nothing too crazy so that they really can have the time to adapt to a different pattern of weight bearing.
So it's like a retainer, essentially.
It is, absolutely.
So, you know, that essentially takes us through everybody on the roster, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the facility that you guys have across from Lambeau. You know, this is part of the whole new Titletown expansion that's going on there. In addition to working with high-level athletes, you see regular people like me too. But what is that new facility like over there? I walked in and I thought it looked almost like a toy store with all the cool gadgets and things that you guys have to make sure people get back quickly. How exciting is this new facility for you guys across the street from Lambeau?
Well, I've been working on it for 3 years. This has been something that a very, very large team, my entire staff, to every staff that we have at Bellin that has come together to truly try to create a place for athlete of all ages. The word athlete, a lot of times people don't associate themselves as an athlete, yet they're exercising on a regular basis. You're an athlete. You don't have to be in a competitive sport to be an athlete. And our goal was to have as many surfaces that a patient or an athlete or whoever, a client, could possibly have to go back to so that we could feel that we were able to feel safe about getting them back. Or just that having softer surfaces to exercise on for people that may just need a little shock absorption. So we have turf, we have wood, we have a track, and then we have just rubber surfaces so that we can truly say we have every surface you're going to get back to. That was our primary. But then also just having a true destination sports medicine clinic that partners great rehab staff with a great facility, with an amazing orthopedic group, with Dr. Eben, Dr. Spears, Dr. Anderson, Dr. McKenzie, and a growing practice in that, and truly having a destination, a place for the athlete.
So for any of you Packer fans that have been out to Lambeau Field or will come out to Lambeau Field, it's essentially directly across the street from Lambeau, right behind Lodge Kohler, right next to Hinterland and all this new stuff that's going in, so you can't miss it. I go there myself, and that's how Charlie and I struck up this relationship. We would talk, shoot the breeze about injuries all the time, and I thought it was really interesting. So hopefully you guys enjoyed some of this conversation as well, but he helps me understand a lot of the Packers' injuries, so hopefully he can help you guys as well. So Charlie, thank you very much for joining us today. And I'll see you soon for my next appointment.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.